Welcome to Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Money Matters is brought to you by Pezzo Financial Consultants. Their team of certified financial planners have been educating their clients to build confidence and find peace with their money for over 35 years. Also by Michelle Oliver of Finance of America Mortgage, lending products for all the stages of your financial life. By HH & Associates Accounting, we aren't just accountants, we provide solutions. By Mountain West Bank, your community bank, with 8 branches in the Treasure Valley. Now, here's Dave Pezzo on KIDO Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Money Matters. I am here with John Mackey, who is with Schroders, and he is the global strategist. You talk with all the fund managers. You guys have like 200 funds.
Yeah. No, it's
an
good to be here, Dave.
Insane number.
Yeah. It's a lot. A lot to keep track of.
It is. But there's $600 billion, and so I just wanted to kind of the reason I mentioned this is really interesting. It's always one of those things you want to talk to portfolio managers. Everybody does. But the reality is they usually are in one area of specific investment. Your job really is to go and talk with all of the portfolio managers in other words, to kind of create a mosaic of what the whole world looks like. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about the way a lot of portfolio managers manage their money too, some of them don't have macro tops-down views of the world. Their job is to find interesting individual stocks or interesting individual bonds and then build a portfolio that way. So if you ask them, what do you think of interest rates in the U.S. or what do you think what's going on with trade, they may not be able to give you a view. So if you can gather all those opinions together, it allows you to have a fairly good view of what's going on in the world and where the opportunities are.
Good. Well, let's start with kind of a general then,
sure.
Around the world look, if you will. So, let's start with Europe because obviously we're like right now in the middle of trade negotiations with them, or some would, if you hate Trump enough, I guess you'd call ahead and say he's trying to cause a trade war with Europe.
Yeah.
All of those things are going on right now, even within Europe, our allies, but also more importantly, Italy. And what's going on there is very much in the news right now and causing some market turmoil.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, look, I think rightly or wrongly, we'd all forgotten how bad things were during the sovereign debt crisis, when Greece, essentially, the economy was a basket case. They'd taken on too much debt heading through the financial crisis, and then they had to pay the price, and politicians across Europe got together and bailed them out. Italy, Spain, Ireland were all drawn into that. People were using the acronym the PIGS, the periphery of Europe. And then over the last 5 to 6 years, a lot of those countries have gone through belt tightening, cutting mm-hmm. costs, cutting spending, trying to reform their economies so that they could grow without the burden of these overhangs of entitlement programs and pensions and make their economies, quite frankly, just more competitive. The one that's been lagging them all, and I think it's slipped underneath the radar, has been Italy. And what happened earlier this year is you had a populist coalition form, the Five Star Movement and the League. Interestingly, one far right, one far left, but they both had the same goal of basically cutting taxes, increasing spending for an economy that, quite frankly, can't bear it. They have the biggest debt burden in Europe, and they need to continue along the reform path before they can start doing things like that. So it's flared up. We think it should resolve itself, but we're certainly watching it closely to make sure it doesn't spread.
Is this, we watched that. We watched it in 2011.
Yep.
We got to go and fuss about it again in 12, and I believe in 13. So this is part four.
Yeah.
But the market's not as fussy. So I'm going to give it that it's at least kind of not going with the exact same thing. Do you actually think this could become a problem, or is it something you're watching because it's a 2% possibility of causing a problem?
So I would agree with what you just said. It's sort of it's a low probability, but the worst case scenario is pretty dire. The worst case scenario is the Italians vote to or go through with some of these reforms they're trying to initiate, the bad reforms, too much spending and for an economy that just can't afford it. And so they're kicked out of the Eurozone, or they decide to leave the Eurozone and form their new currency. It's a big economy. Not only does it have big debt, it's a big economy. I don't think Germany would survive that. And so you'd have the potential beginnings of a fragmentation, splintering of the common currency. The reason we think it's a low probability is just based on comments that have come out of the five leaders of the Five Star Movement, as well as the president of Italy. They have a interesting form to the government. They have a president that has to work with a coalition government there, and then they appoint a prime minister and a finance minister. That's where the disagreements have come up. Do you appoint a reform-minded prime minister or someone who's going to go forward with these spending plans and tax cuts that the League and the Five Star Movement have stated? But over the last week, it's gone from bad to okay to bad again. And to your point earlier, the way the markets responded to that was sell everything, just, you know, take no prisoners at first, throw the baby out with the bathwater. And then this week, we've seen the market actually settle down a bit, rally back, and believe, like we do, that a more common sense approach to forming a government and moving forward with probably a little bit of the things this Five Star Movement and the coalition want to do, as well as trying to do some of the reforms they need to do to make the economy more competitive.
Do you, is there, people talk about this, and of course, George Soros, who hasn't been right on anything except the pound, I think.
How old is George?
I don't think anybody really knows.
Right.
I don't even know if it's really George Soros. It could actually be a stand-in.
Could be. Yeah.
He's been around a while, but he has not really been right on his commentary, but he still gets a lot of press, and now he's out there talking about the demise of the euro. What's your position on that? Do you think that these countries will continue to want to pull away?
No. I mean, look, so Greece still uses the euro, right? Greece was sort of the epitome of a country that thought they could get a bit better deal by leaving the euro. I mean, one of the things that happens when your country is over indebted, and this is a playbook from emerging markets, you have too much debt. You know, your economy is not growing strong enough to deal with that debt, is you can do one of two things, and usually you do both at the same time, is you default on your debt and you weaken your currency significantly. So Greece defaulted on the debt, but they couldn't weaken their currency because they're in the euro. So the government at the time thought, hey, we'll leave the eurozone, we'll issue new drachmas, we'll devalue it significantly, and that's one way we can get out of our debt burden. The problem with that, though, is that if you weaken your currency significantly, it significantly reduces the purchasing power that you have. Businesses don't want to come there and do business with you. Your citizens can't buy goods from other countries, or it costs them, inflation goes up, and it costs them a lot. So I think looking at the way things turned out in Greece, it's highly unlikely that a country like Italy is going to go down that path of, you know, leaving the euro, the common currency. And actually, countries that were formerly part of the pigs, I feel bad to any listeners out there that are from Portugal or Italy, Ireland, or Greece, or Spain, countries like Portugal and Spain have actually done a lot of reforms and made their economies more competitive. They still have major issues.
Right.
Unemployment in Spain is 20% plus, but it's come down from 25. So
better
it's
than
headed,
was.
Headed in the right direction. So I think they're headed in the right direction. We're actually bullish overall on Europe. It's a stock picker's market. It's not a beta market, meaning you don't just buy Europe as a basket. You want someone that can go in there and find those good companies that can take advantage of the opportunities and probably have been beaten up because of political risk.
Gotcha. Now, Brexit, let's stay on this European breakup a little bit, because that's a different ball game, because that's a strong country with a vibrant economy, and basically said we're tired of Brussels telling us what to do with everything from the economy to immigration. And historically, countries that become more free have actually done very well economically. But it can get messy. Is this a concern for you all?
So it is, and it's been surprising in two ways that it's played out. When the Brexit vote was coming up, sort of the consensus view was if they vote Brexit in, the British economy is going to go into a recession and the market's going to tank. And the market tanked for about 4 days, and it bottomed, and it rallied back. And it's actually done okay. It hasn't done great, but it's done okay.
Right.
It's actually one of our favorite countries to find stocks in because of that overhang of Brexit and how it's going to – they still haven't fully reached an agreement with the European Union on trade, tariffs, immigration, banking rules, et cetera. So that overhang has created that uncertainty, and a lot of good British companies are trading at a cheap price. I mean, our view is that it will be a overhang on economic growth because of that uncertainty. You do get trade barriers, which make it more difficult to do business across the European Union. So I think it's a perfect example of nothing's black and white. Brexit mm-hmm. isn't bad or good. It's, you know, and for some companies, it's modestly bad. For some companies, it's modestly good. And for the average British citizen, depending on where you work and what your business is and where your family comes from, just say you're a British citizen married to a German or a Spaniard or an Italian and your kids are British, what happens to your husband and your wife, right? You don't know. So I think it's a very nuanced issue. Our view is that over time it will be more of a drag on the British economy than a good thing. But over time, I think, to your point, they become freer and maybe they adjust to it and they adapt. And 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, maybe they'll look back and they'll say that was a good thing for us. But it's too far down the road to know for sure.
Gotcha. But right now, it really hasn't been very disruptive, has it?
It hasn't been very disruptive in aggregate across the board, mm-hmm. but for certain companies, it's been hugely disruptive.
Okay, fair enough.
Meaning that you could have a German company that has a factory in the UK, and because of that, they're pulling that factory away because they don't know how it's going to be treated. Are they going to be taxed at a higher level in the UK versus Germany? Are there going to be trade tariffs on goods that are going out of the UK that they're producing there and vice versa? So I think in aggregate, it's been less disruptive than people expected, but for certain companies, it has been quite burdensome.
Gotcha. All right, so before we leave Europe, this is just a broad question that comes up all the time. So you have been talking favorably about what's going on in Europe and valuations in Europe. And we've heard that same song and dance for a long time. You know, Europe has got great value. And let me put this in without making this a commentary.
Yep.
But you have a situation in Europe where for years they've had slower growth than the U.S. They do not make reforms. They mm-hmm. spend way too much money on social programs. They don't like business. Why am I going to believe going forward that they're in other words, they deserve these crummy valuations because they're crummy companies and they're run by crummy governments.
Yeah.
From an economic perspective, you might want to live there. That's great and groovy, but it is not good economically. Now, for saying that, are they making the reforms and changes that are truly going to say, hey, these companies deserve higher PE ratios and are cheaper now and are going to get more expensive?
Yeah, no, so it's a great question, Dave, and it's something that or a question along those lines that I've been asked for the last 5 to 6 years. And the common refrain would be, well, the Europeans don't work as hard as us. They're not as competitive. They work 35-hour weeks. They take 6 weeks off in the summertime, et cetera, et cetera. And honestly, a lot of that is true.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So a lot of the European companies probably don't deserve higher valuations. But I think the key point here is that is priced in. The slower potential economic growth is priced in. The slower earnings growth potential is priced in. And what the market's not pricing in is a surprise to the upside. So the market right now is trading at a forward PE ratio of roughly 14, a little bit lower than that, maybe 13.8. The U.S. trades at about 16.5. And so some people would say to me, well, that's fair, right? Europe should trade cheaper than the U.S. But I think the other point to make is that Europe trades cheap to its history. Mm-hmm. And generally, the market tends to have a reversion to the mean mentality. Let's get back to averages. And averages can move up and down over time. But what drives the PE higher is earnings growth. And Europe basically went through a five-year earnings recession. You had no earnings growth for basically 5 years. A lot of that was driven by the periphery, the really inefficient, non-competitive economies of the periphery. And what you have today is an economy that has growth, economic growth, running around 1.5 to 2%, so lower than the U.S., but that's coming off zero. Mm-hmm. So the rate of change is better than what we have in the U.S. And that should drive revenue growth, which should allow these companies which have cut costs to boost their margins, and thus you get good earnings growth. So our expectation is that you have, last year you had good earnings growth in Europe. We expect okay earnings growth in Europe this year. It just got too good last year and the euro rallied, so that affected companies that export outside the European area. This year it's going to be okay. Next year it gets much better. So the market tends to be discount things sort of 12 to 18 months in advance, as you know very well. And what we think that'll be reflected in is probably better equity market performance in Europe this year than what people expect. So we think there's an opportunity within Europe. And again, we're biased. We're an active management shop. We know Europe really well. We're headquartered out of London. But we think there are tons of good individual stock opportunities within the European market. And Italy's one part of that. Germany, which is one of the most efficient economies in the world, is another part of that. So if you're a portfolio manager, you can look at some of the good companies that got thrown out with the bad in Italy. You can look at some of the great companies in Germany that might be trading at a discount because they're part of the European Union. And you've got this huge universe of stocks to choose from.
Right, right. Well, that brings up a good point. We sometimes measure these places not by the company, individual stock selection, but by broadly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the P.E. ratio in the United States. Well, what does that have to do when Amazon's at infinity?
Yeah.
Right? And it's a great company because they choose to pour it all back into their business model.
Exactly.
And investors accept it.
So let me add to that point. So the S&P 500 this year is up 2% as of yesterday, right? Today, I haven't seen what the market's doing. I think it was down a little bit this morning. The tech sector is up roughly 8 or 9. This consumer staples sector is down 13.
Right.
So look,
right.
If you're a portfolio manager and you pick the right stocks and avoid the wrong ones, you could be up 4, 5, 6% while the market's only up 2. So we tend to look at things. It's easier to look at things in aggregate versus looking at those individual opportunities.
Exactly. Well, very good point. All right. I'm going to hold this question, even though it's related to Europe, but I want to tease it a little bit. And that is, why in the world? It makes no sense to me that people would have been buying Italian bonds. I mean, it's fresh in the news. Okay, they have the same yield as the United States of America. What kind of blooming idiot buys a horrible piece of paper that everybody already knows they have so versus the United States? And so I'm going to hold that. I know currencies come into play in the EU and all that stuff, but I think it's an interesting question that we live in a world of nearly negative interest rates in some places in Europe. Certainly not long ago were negative. And positive interest rates, why that money flow around the world. And it really does have a dynamic impression on those markets. So we got to take a quick break. And when we come right back, we're going to visit more with John Mackey with Schroders, a manager of $600 billion globally. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome to this special edition of Money Matters. Of course, I'm Dave Petzo. I'm here with John Mackey, who is from New York, although you've got that really great Australian accent.
New Jersey.
I know,
accent.
And ladies out there, I know, because I know how hot that accent is. It is. He measures up to it. This is a good looking Australian boy, that's for sure.
Thank you.
I don't know,
I
not a boy. You're actually a good that. Older yeah. than him.
Turning red on the radio.
Yeah. It's great to have you here. You're out of New York, but you travel around the States mostly, or all around the
Europe as well,
and Europe as well to really get the message out. Now the about Schroders, which is a smaller money management firm, but it's not really very small. $600 billion is a lot of money.
Yep.
But you're really marketing more now in the U.S. and getting your message out. With 200 funds, though, you're getting information from everybody, right? This is the you're getting data from a lot of different managers from around the world. Now, we talked a little bit about Europe, and we talked about now why in the world I kind of left it here at this. Why in the world would anybody be buying Italian debt over U.S. debt?
Sure.
It just makes no sense to us out here. Or why would I pay negative interest rates in Germany at not that long ago?
Yeah, so you could have asked the same question in the U.S. 2 years ago when the 10-year was yielding 137. It got all the way down to 1.37%. And the question you could have asked then was, why would anyone buy the 10-year below 2? Right? You're getting less than a long-term inflation return for a 10-year bond. And the reason was because you had what was called the Bernanke put. The Fed was buying a lot of Treasury bonds, and so you would basically do what the Fed does, right? Follow the Fed. And you have the same thing in Europe with the ECB buying bonds from all the countries that are within the common currency. So they're buying Italian bonds within Italy as well. And it's the same thing in the U.S. You have banks and you have pension funds that will buy Italian bonds of their own country. The banks will do it for regulatory reasons. They have to own some. So will insurance companies.
Sure.
And then pension funds will do it as well because they're following the ECB. It allows them to take, I'm putting air quotes up here, get a risk-free investment. Now, that changed over the last week when Italian bonds went from essentially 1.5% all the way up to 3.25%.
Right.
So in a one-week time span, you get a pretty nasty negative return on your books. But now we've seen it come back down. So I think the question you're kind of leading to is here was, why would you buy a 10-year Italian bond at 1.5% when you can get a 10-year at 2.75 or 3? And the reason is that if you're in Europe and you're a European investor, your returns are measured in euros, right?
Right.
So if you're going to buy in the U.S., you have to hedge out currency risk. You don't have to, but most people do. It's just not worth taking on that additional risk of the currency moving against you. So to do that, and then I don't want to keep this as simple as possible, you have to borrow dollars and then short the currency. Now, it used to be that borrowing dollars was really cheap. So you could sell your Italian bonds, buy U.S. Treasury bonds, and make a return. As interest rates moved up in the U.S., the Fed is now has the short-term rate at 1.75%. That's a good reflection of the cost of borrowing dollars. So it became a lot more expensive and makes less sense now for a European investor to come to the U.S. and make money off buying 10-year treasuries. So the environment has changed a lot. So being in Europe, actually, when the 10-year Italian bond got to 3, some of our portfolio managers in Europe, just by email, chat, and on calls, was asking the question, is now a good buying opportunity, right? Is there a trade here? And I can guarantee you, if we were talking about it, tons of other portfolio managers out there were looking at the same thing.
Right, right. It doesn't – the currency fluctuations, this is another one that doesn't make sense on a fundamental basis. Now, it's changed,
yep,
literally just in the last month or two. But the dollar weakening against the euro as the economy kept improving,
yep,
doesn't make any sense to most people. Why was that happening?
Sure. So currencies are very confusing, right? It's funny. I was at a meeting a week ago with our emerging market debt portfolio manager who invests in a lot of local currencies around the emerging world. And I'm sure if you've read newspapers recently, you've seen that the Turkish lira has weakened considerably and the Brazilian real has and the Argentine peso has. And he made a joke that even he can't figure it out sometimes. But I think the important point is, if you look at currencies over the long term, what tends to happen is countries that have capital surpluses, so they have a trade surplus, they're exporting more goods than they're importing, mm-hmm, and they have a manageable deficit, tend to attract inflows. You also need to have relatively cheap valuations in your equity market, in your real assets market, meaning companies are cheap to buy and assets are cheap to buy, and you have to have growth as well. But if you get all of those things together, the currency tends to appreciate. And what you have in the U.S. and why the U.S., we think the U.S. dollar is on a long-term depreciating trend against a broad basket of currencies. Some of those currencies will weaken, but in aggregate, we think the dollar will weaken versus those currencies. And this will be a good thing for the U.S. in the long run, mm-hmm, is because valuations in the U.S. are rich, and we have a trade deficit, and we have a budget deficit.
Hello, welcome, and thanks again for giving me the opportunity to do this. What a pleasure. All right. Anyway, I wanted to. We're going to talk with Reverend Bill Roscoe here. We also have known each other since you've been to town, pretty much through John Duane again on the radio, right?
That's right. Yeah.
John. What a great connector John was.
He was. He was a terrific guy. And Chris Kelly, I love those two. And right after I came to town, they had me on the air, and here I am again on the air at KIDO, and this time with Dave Pezzo.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dave, for the invitation.
I can't let this go by because I always like to talk about the incredible work the Rescue Mission does.
Thank you.
Not just in feeding people, but having a real path forward. I use a statistic all the time as a starting place. Let's talk about it, and I'm sure we'll roll into all the different programs you're doing now. But 500 people per year have come in homeless and jobless and transitioned out into the community working and on their own. 500 a year. That's changed.
That is
people.
That's real change in our whole community, Dave. And that number has been pretty consistent for about 5 or 6 years now. So, and we're seeing it right now. We're on target to do it again. It's a remarkable thing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a matter of opportunities being available, and then we being facilitators to get people from where they are to where they need to be independently living again.
Yeah.
So, again, I got to say it's the most generous community on the face of the earth. God loves these people more than I ever will. Mm. And with all of that together and the hands-on care that we can provide at the mission, the encouragement, the optimism, all the things you and Dan Long were talking about, all of that working together helps people find their way back into the community, back into productive living.
You know, it does. And it's such a calling. I these are not you and all the people you work with at the Rescue Mission are not exactly highly compensated people. In a worldly sense.
Well, okay.
In a worldly sense. You know, it's not. It's a calling. And, and the amount of hours you have to put in, the heartbreak of people that come in that you love and it doesn't work out this time.
Yeah, and we see a lot of disappointments along the way. So those 500 or so a year are a real encouragement to us. And in that group of people, of course, are those who go through the drug and alcohol recovery program.
Exactly.
And when you see those folks make that turnaround, and there's 18 to 25 of those a year on average, you see people that have been living on the street because of chemical dependency and alcoholism, and their families are scattered to the wind, and life is chaotic, and they've been arrested and in jail and just faced all kinds of terrible life situations. When you see that end and you see that change and you look at who those people are a year or 2 years later, it is really inspirational. And one or two of those in your whole life would be great.
But, right.
You know, we see 18 to 20 of those a year. And
crazy.
I can go all the way back now, 26 years of rescue mission work, and I've got people still out there doing great who came into the mission hopeless dope addicts.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm looking at one of them.
Well, you heard that story before.
Yeah.
40-something years ago, I was one, and Christ changed my life. I found some great support from my church and people that, you know, provided that life-changing program that I needed to inspire and encourage me, and my faith in God and His love for me turned all of that around. And that's what we really have to offer at the rescue mission.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing. It's an amazingly successful program. I think, you know, one of the things I've always focused on with your drug, alcohol, veterans programs, all the different programs you have to actually offer a pathway forward for people. And include on that, I got to include all this other stuff, but real quickly so that people know. I mean, but you help people get GEDs, mm-hmm. to learn to do resumes, to get them dressed appropriately, how to interview for jobs, all that stuff to get them prepared for life, because they have been maybe 20 years or more on drugs, which is just stops your life. Mm-hmm. There's no development during that period of life.
That's right.
And so they have no skills. They have no interactive skills with human beings. So they're totally unemployable.
They are.
And you teach them.
Yeah, and it goes back to the family of origin issues, Dave. We see kids in our shelters today that we saw their parents 16 years ago here at Boise Rescue Mission. We saw mom or dad in our shelter, and today we have those children in our shelter, and that breaks our hearts, you know, that these kids are growing up in such a chaotic and makeshift environment. They really don't have the opportunities that they should have in order to find success in life for themselves. But we're doing the best we can with a kids program, you know, intervening at the early ages of life. And today we've got, I think I can say safely, we have at least three and maybe four of our former kids program members in college, going to college. And they went on our college road trip with us. They stayed at the mission with mom or dad. And we're seeing these kids finding the way out of that life cycle of poverty and addiction and pain. Mm. That's a beautiful thing, too.
You bet. I think you were, you're working with CWI on some things, too.
Well, we've partnered with everybody we can, Dave. And I'm not kidding. You know, we want to collaborate and partner with as many people and organizations as we can to provide those opportunities, because we can't do it all.
No.
That's impossible. And so CWI and Boise State, we've got two students at NNU. We've got great support from NNU. Right across the board, health and welfare, children's services, adult protective, veterans administration, the schools and the teachers and counselors in the schools, we're making contact and staying in touch with as many of these people as we can, because that's what it takes, you know, to put all the services around someone that are available, mm-hmm. to make them aware of it, to put those services around them. You have to have these good connections and relationships. It's kind of like you guys were talking about in business. You've got to make relationships with people that can support your effort and that you can support. You
right.
know, they love us at the Ada County Jail and the Canyon County Jail. We're high on the list over there, because when people come out of jail, we'll pick them up, take them to the rescue mission, get them on their feet. And the same with IDOC, Department of Corrections. We have great relationships over there, probation and parole, drug court, veterans court, all of those things. We are involved in all of these different parts of our community because those are where we're going to find the people in need, and those are the people that we want to bring into the rescue mission and get back on their feet.
You know, it's fantastic. And you're talking about partnerships, okay? So Sylvia Hampel, who was in here and runs Clearview Cleaning, right, with Dan earlier, had mentioned this. You know, it's like, you know, would you please give Reverend Bill my card, because we are looking for 80 employees right now.
Oh, boy.
Right. I know. Exactly. And so, but what I want to do is toss this out to all the employers who want to try to get on board and support, because you are looking for people to, or places to place these people who are successfully coming through addictions and homelessness. Where do they work?
Yeah. Well, they work all over our community, and I appreciate Sylvia thinking of us that way, and I'm sure we'll have some referrals. You know, and as a matter of fact, I hope Sylvia's listening, Dave, because we've got competition for her coming out of our programs. We have two of our graduates who have their own cleaning business going on right now in this valley, and they're both doing great.
That's great.
It is great.
That's awesome.
But a lot of people need that first job after program. That's why we opened a thrift store, you know, so we can get people into the work routine at the thrift store, help them develop some good job skills and resume. But we need employers that are looking for a few good men and women to give us a holler. And we have those men and women who are ready, willing, and able to go to work. And we want to put them to work so that they can have their own place to live and take care of their own family again.
Exactly. Perfect. Perfect. All right. With that, we got much more to talk about, but we do, not unfortunately. It is a capitalist country, and so we do have to pay for all of this wonderful airtime. And so we're going to take a commercial break right now, and when we come back, more with Reverend Bill Roscoe of the Rescue Mission. Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. What a pleasure it is to introduce a longtime friend and to highlight an amazing... I want to talk about the kids' programs, and I do, but Reverend Bill, you have been amazing in the growth of this valley, an important part, because I'm changing directions completely on you. I told you I want to talk about the kids' program, but maybe we'll get to it. But what has happened in this valley, I don't think people fully appreciate until you go to Seattle, you go to Portland, you go to San Francisco, and you see what is going on with the homeless situation. And I'm going to say this. You're not saying this. I am. But there's been problems in the past with working with some of the city here, and that's gotten better. And I'm glad. But it makes no sense, because what you guys have done is kept 500 people a day off the streets. Boise would be a lot different. It would look a lot more like Seattle and Portland. Human feces all over the place. You go to a building like mine, and it would just smell like urine as soon as I pulled up, because we're right in the downtown area. That's what it'd look like. There'd be a tent. I'd have to park around the tent. Stuff like that is the reality of it. But somehow you've taken this from one storefront in Boise. There's now five shelters. Is that right?
Yeah.
At Clear Out in Nampa Caldwell.
Yeah.
Amazing, Bill, really. It's just awesome you've done. And I don't want to give all the numbers if I'm wrong. Is that about the right numbers?
Well, you're right. We have four 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week shelters, two in Nampa, two in Boise. We serve men, women, and children. We don't discriminate. We serve everyone who comes to the door the best we can. But you're right, Dave, and I'll take some credit on behalf of my wonderful team at the Rescue Mission and the good inspiration and blessings of God. I'll take credit in some small way myself. But the fact of the matter is that we have a community here that really cares about people legitimately.
Yes.
They don't want to just throw money at a problem and turn their back and walk away. They want to be involved in solving the problem. They want to give their money to a place and agencies and ministries that are really going to use that, maximize that money to make a difference in our community by making a difference in the lives of people. And that's, God has blessed us to be able to do that. We have a great police department in Boise and Nampa. We have sheriff's officers in Canyon and Ada County. The leadership of those law enforcement organizations have been wonderful, bright people with a clear understanding of this problem of homelessness and what, you know, the root causes of homelessness and how do we solve this problem. And so we've had proactive policing for a long time in this valley, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, the city governments have been very wise in making decisions to encourage agencies, ministries like ours that are making a difference in the lives of people. And we don't always get the kind of cooperation we want or hope for, but there haven't been big barriers and stumbling blocks thrown in front of us, whereas in some communities there are.
Yeah.
I can, those cities you named, I have friends in rescue mission ministries in all those cities. And for the most part, they're doing the best they can, but they're swimming upstream.
Mm.
The competition from government-funded agencies is a big problem.
Mm.
Because when you have government-funded agencies trying to do the work of social service, in the case of chronically homeless people and other people on the street, they have restrictions and limitations that keep them from being able to get involved in the lives of those people, such as we can as a private non-government funded organization. That's a huge difference, because when someone misbehaves in our kitchen, we tell them, if you keep that up, we're not going to serve you. Whereas if I'm taking government money, well, I've got to watch out what I say and who I serve and who I don't serve.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that we're mean or any of that, because we certainly aren't. Come on down and check us out, folks. We love people.
Are not mean.
Well, we
but
do
if
the
somebody
best.
Pulls a knife or something, you've got to be able to deal with
you've
it.
You've got
right.
to draw the lines.
Right.
And you've got to have order.
You
and
talked about that once recently. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it is people need to understand that there's a lot of there's mental illness. There's all kinds of things you guys deal with, and it is something I think that one of your staff not that long ago was actually beat up.
Yeah,
by a homeless person.
We've had a staff person assaulted at City Light, and that was a terrible event. And the person who committed the violent act is a woman we know who was off of her medication. She's chronically persistently mentally ill and was off her medication and lost control.
Yeah.
And our staff suffered for that. And so, you know, we have to deal with that, too. It's the real world out there.
Yeah.
We have incidents of violence from time to time, but nothing like you see in other places.
Exactly.
You know, when you serve 500 people a day with beds in shelter, well, 450, 500 a day, and you only have, you know, one or two incidents of violence over the course of a year, that's a remarkable thing.
It is.
When you consider who those people are sleeping in those beds.
Yeah.
But back to the point. The point is we have a generous community that cares about people. You're one of those guys, Dave. You're one of those businesses that supports the mission. You see the outcomes. You see these 500 people. You see these people going to college. We've got people in every part of this community right now who 15, 16 years ago were guests of the rescue mission.
Yep.
Working, productive people, members of the church, serving God, serving their community. We have a law enforcement officer. We've got a guy doing pre-med. He's 4 years into his pre-med career. And on and on. And small business owners and house cleaners, carpenters, plumbers, computer programmers. And those people all came through the door of the rescue mission, homeless and hurting and broken and lonely. And because of the support from this community and the wonderful people God has called and raised up to serve with me, we've been able to make a difference in their lives.
You certainly have. It's one of the reasons I think that so many of us are touched so deeply, because you it's like, okay, so I'm going to write a check, but it's not just for a meal. That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got to feed people to change people, right?
Yeah.
But you have a pathway.
Yeah, and
a successful pathway.
Yes.
It's not this narrow gate to walk through. You guys have something like 80% success rate with folks.
With our drug and alcohol recovery program.
I mean, that's unreal.
It is.
The best government program is not 20%, is it?
Right, yeah.
It's amazing because of all those restrictions you're talking about, right? I mean, where if people fail, it doesn't matter. You don't have a time limit.
That's right.
I need more time.
That's right.
Then stay.
That's right. And I love that. I love that freedom that we have in our ministry to do that. We had a lady stay with us almost 4 years, Dave. And she was seriously, persistently mentally ill. She had no education. She had two little babies.
Yeah.
Her life was upside down. It took 4 years for her to find the way out of all of that mess. But she found it, and she's doing well today. And we took the time. We were able to take the time and help her through that process. And it's not uncommon anymore to have people for a year and a half, 2 years, because they have such great need when they come through the door. You mentioned the GEDs. If you don't have a GED, forget it. You're never going to get a really good job anywhere.
Right.
And you've got to have computer skills. And so we've developed these programs to teach people the basics of computer. And we've partnered with all the educational, academic people out in the community so that we farm people out.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great success with people getting high school diplomas and even going on to college. And that really matters. That makes a big difference. And I love the new trend now, finally, I think from the federal level through the president, of having apprenticeships again, getting businesses inspired to provide trade apprenticeships. Mm-hmm. I did that. I was an apprentice carpenter out of the Army, and that made a huge difference in my life. I got a good job, and I had a good career. I got a better one now, but, you know, I started out as a nail pounder. So we're going to continue to do what we can to stay connected to people and agencies and organizations, businesses, and get people back on their feet.
I know, and you do. And a great job. And also, of course, effective with the kids. I know we're going to run out of time. We're going to run out of time. But how many kids are in the summer program now?
We're averaging about 60 a day.
60 a day.
It's unbelievable. And they're having a great time. And I got a great team serving those kids. And those kids are seeing life from a different angle right now than they have in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. Reverend Bell, thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Great to be with you.
It's great to be with you as
Thanks
well.
Thanks for all your support. Thanks for all your support, Dave. You're a great friend of the Boise Rescue Mission.
My pleasure.
Appreciate
my pleasure.
You.
Hello, and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and of course, these are my opinions only. Not a broker-dealer, they're not this radio station. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, or sell. And we're certainly not here to tell you it's time to get out of the market. We're certainly not here to tell you that you need to talk about the stock market as if it was some kind of a Wall Street casino so we can sell you a fear-based product like an equity indexed annuity. We're the opposite. We want to get this right. Getting money right is important. It's very, very important to people. And I don't mean right in the sense that, yeah, I have all of my investments positioned correctly. I've got the right diversification, all that nonsense. It's important. But what I mean is getting money right, our perspective of money, what it does for us, right? What we use it for, the tools we use it for, right? It's a tool. What are we using it for? Have the right perspective. The markets have volatility. They fluctuate. It's normal. Chill out. That's what we're here to talk about. And today, particularly, I want to talk about this absurdity that's going on out there. I mean, it always goes on to some degree. Everybody thinks they're so smart. Everybody thinks they're rational. Everybody thinks that things are... that their thinking and their reading is just like somehow unique, and they're the only ones that really see the coming whatever. And they go on and on, and especially the smarter people are, the harder it is. Now, as a reminder of the basis of this, and then I want to go through a number of things. This is so important for us to understand. I mean, if you just don't have a wow moment, then you just kind of go to the podcast. Okay, I'm not telling you this is going to be the greatest radio program ever in the history of the world. What I'm telling you is that what I'm going to say here, if you don't go I recognize me in some of that, then you got your head in your sand, in the sand, and you will not change. You are not rational. You aren't. So let's pretend you just quit pretending you are. Quit reading the same thing and just identifying with whatever it is. Get your confirmation bias and never change your mind. Because we all have this because we're human beings. We continue to see this from really smart people. I'm sorry, okay, the basis of this right now, we got to go back here. Fidelity did a study of all the people, right? Okay? All the investors. They got hundreds of thousands of them, right? And this thing called you have to know your client, right? So they have to ask these questions, you know, race and age and education level and all what your profession is, all that stuff, right? So they slice and dice all this data. You know, is it young people are better investors, men, women? Who is it? The highly educated? That's got to be who it is, right? And there's one group of people that outperformed the others by so far, it wasn't even close. I mean, it wasn't even close. Who were those people? They were the people who had died or forgot they had an account. They left it alone. They didn't outsmart it. They weren't clever by half. They just owned the greatest investment that there's ever been. And they kept owning it in spite of all the stuff you could read about. Like right now, this, and this, why do I set this context? Because this is what you hear every single day over and over and over again. Really bright, but George Will, ooh, he's so smart, George Will. And of course, a guy that like comments on politics and really loves baseball, that's the guy I want to listen to for economic advice. Why, you ask? I don't know. But many really smart people, I'm sure George Will's IQ is really high, really, really high, feel that they have to comment on things they have no business commenting on. So George Will does his call, and he says, we are having, are you ready for this? His words, an epic collapse is coming. An epic collapse is coming. Okay. George has got it. An epic collapse is coming. Now, I understand he's an anti-Trumper. I get that. But this is a yet another negative article from a non-economist, just an arrogant commentator. And he cites things like the GDP to debt, and I don't like that either. But my best guess is that George Will has been dead wrong. I mean, just dead wrong politically. I mean, it's like, who cares what George Will thinks? He hasn't been right for a long time. Not just about the economy, about things he should be commenting on, right? Like what's going on in politics. He was wrong about Trump. But instead of being wrong and just saying, okay, I was wrong, and then moving on, I think he just wants to be relevant again. Somebody, hey, listen to me over here. Remember, I'm George Will. Okay, I'm not just picking on George Will. How about all the commentary? This was a recent, I kid you not, this week headline. Optimism is so high, it suggests recession is imminent. Really? So if optimism is high, then that's an indicator of a recession right around the corner. I mean, what kind of incredible drug is this guy taking? It's just garbage. Okay, because we're optimistic, that means a recession's right around the corner. A recession's always right around the corner. You just don't know how many miles it is till the next corner. How many years? But how many times have we called for the next recession? It doesn't come. Does it help you in anything? Guess what? We're going to have other recessions. I said it. It's true. I don't know when. And why we want to invest this way makes no sense at all. I mean, gal. It just goes on and on. The doomsday reports. You can't get away from. There's a whole wall of shame. Darn it, it's sitting on my desk. But you couldn't see it anyway. But I could see it, and I want to see it again. Whole wall of shame. You know, from Peter, people like Peter Schiff, the end is near. The end is near. It really is near. I swear it's near. It's super near now. As soon as we get to this thing, I mean, this has gone on for a decade. And still we go, Peter Schiff says the world's coming to an end. Part 12. Why do I want to listen to Peter Schiff? Part 12. He's been wrong. He's always wrong. It's doomsday all the time. Even Robert Shiller and his CAPE index. And it just goes on and on. And then everybody pops these people out. Well, did you see what Goldman Sachs? Did you see what that analyst? Did you see that? There's thousands of people, and bunches of them are negative, and even more of them want to get their name in the paper and make gobs of money. If they make a big call, then they're right. Because I'm going to make a big call. Next week, we collapse. Woo! And if I'm right, then, you know, and of course, I'll be wrong. So then the next week, I think for sure I'm going to double down on stupid, and I'm going to make a giant call of the future, and it's not even possible to do. But if I'm right, then people will know I can do the undoable over and over again, and I can predict the future. Look, the greatest investors of all time, Peter Lynch, Michael Price, John Templeton, and yes, Warren Buffett. I mean, the list goes on, right? We can talk about Graham, we can talk about Davis, we can talk about all those guys that are just unbelievable. You know, you take the S&P, you put them up, and they just destroy it. Not for a year, for decades. Not even close. They're that good. Every single one of them went out of their way to tell everybody you can't time the market. I can't time it. Even John Templeton said, we've spent millions of dollars analyzing different systems to try to figure out if we could time the market, even a little bit. We've come to the conclusion we can't. He beat the S&P 500 by 5 percentage points a year. Do you know how much exponential return that is? That's like over the 30-year period. 30 years! 30-year period he did this. That means, you know, your $10,000 turns into like $6 million instead of like only a million. That's how big a difference that kind of stuff is. It's not a little difference to earn 15 instead of 10. Nothing wrong with 10. But do you know the average investor doesn't get anywhere near 10? Even though I'm talking about the average stock market investor. In fact, way less than 10% of the average stock investors get 10. But Dave, I know you're saying, you could just put it in the S&P 500 and get that. And the answer is yes. But you see, you forget. We are rational human beings, we think. We're smart. We're plugged in. We're wired. And so we go forth timing the market. And we fail and fail epically over and over and over again. But you see, don't worry about it. It's kind of like the guy walking through the casino that only remembers his wins. Not all the losses. So we as human beings have a marvelous capacity. I've actually heard people say this before. I just can sense things. I just know when the market's going to go. I actually had a guy tell me that. And yes, you're right. He was an incredibly intelligent guy. Very successful in business. Incredibly successful. Very wealthy. The smarter we are, the harder it is. Able to tell ourselves how well we do, even when we don't. And then we find article after article after article. And then we don't even understand this. You can't even find articles that talk about the market in a positive way. You can't. When have you ever heard of a currency discussion? I mean, like, yeah, because I know what currency is. Nobody even knows. It's like, oh, you know, because of the strong dollar, weak dollar, blah, blah, blah dollar. The currency against the yen-euro exchange is blah, blah, blah. And they're like going, I don't even know what the heck the guy said. But it sounds bad. So we all know walking away that currency things are bad. We don't know why. We don't know what's going on. But you can end up with a conversation that the same people say, because the dollar's strong, it's awful. The dollar's weak, it's awful. And nobody, because you can't even understand the gobbledygook they're talking about or remember the fact that they've been wrong for a decade. Or how about a lifetime? Because they have plenty of those people out there. Wrong for a lifetime. This is not a hard game. But all the noise is noise, and it's always negative. Always. You know, if you printed a newspaper every 3 years or 5 years, how much time would we spend on that? Talking about the Kardashians. My boyhood hero becoming a girl. How much time will we spend on that? And how much time will we spend on, well, I think the market's overpriced. I think we're up for an epic collapse. Optimism is so high, it suggests a recession is imminent. Wow, that's important data. No, we would talk about the fact that we almost have cured cancer. Huh. We would talk about the fact that life expectancies are exploding. That the new 50 is 80 years old now. That they've figured out how to, you know, if you exercise properly and that you can hit a golf ball into your 70s, you can still hit it 280 or whatever. We talk about that. Not all the doom and gloom all the time. But that's not what they do every day. Bombed, bombed, bombed by all the negativity all the time. Couple that constant bombardment. It's kind of like, it's just financial pornography. And nobody would go out and say, hey, little boy, the best way to learn about how to deal with women in your life is to sit around all day long and watch pornography. Well, I'm telling you, I'm not just being shocking. I'm just saying nobody would say that. But who in their right mind would then tell people what you need to do, even though you don't really understand the financial markets, is to have all of this negative noise screamed at you all day long and pretend that you're getting good, solid thought process to help you with your investments. Nobody would say that. But that's what we do. Pouring negativity at us all the time. No, I got this. I can handle all the negative. No, we can't. You got to dial it out. And you have to stop and look at the big picture, and we don't. How many times are you just taking a walk and going, okay, you know what, as I look around the world, and I'm not saying you don't once in a while, we all stop and we hear children laughing or see something absolutely particularly stunning. Like this morning, just looking out of my deck, and we're just like, wow, look at those balloons. It just takes your breath away. They were just so beautiful. Up against the foot, it's such a beautiful morning. Takes your breath away. But what I'm saying is, how many times are you just kind of like, maybe you're working out or you're just relaxing, you're just sitting and thinking and contemplating, and you're just saying, wow, it's amazing, all the abundance around us, longer life expectancies. And we take a big picture look at how amazing, wonderful, and how far we've come. And the real question is this that I ask. Real point, if you will. Is the world growing? Yes. Therefore, companies that feed the world are growing. Yes, they are. Not yes, but. Let's just get away from the but. Everything has to have a but to it, doesn't it? Right? Right? Good news, but. Good news, but. Good news, but. Okay, throw buts on everything. But the reality is good news, followed by more good news, good news, good news, and then more good news, good news, good news. That's really what's happening if we dial it back. The world is more at peace than ever in history by so far. And if you don't believe that, I'm sorry, you're being irrational. In fact, you're being delusional. You are. Because it's real. It's not being a Pollyanna to make a factual statement. It doesn't mean that there is no death. There are no shootings. There are no skirmishes in the world. But it's less than it's ever been. People live longer lives. We just take for granted that half of Africa doesn't starve to death every year. Yeah, oh yeah, we solved that problem. No big deal. It was a big deal. It's a big deal. We take for granted the fact that we can go on and know anything with our cell phone. Yeah, well, you know, but. Yeah, you know, but. Everything. Well, how connected that makes it. How many more billions of people are now connected that will help advance even more things in the future that never would have been that connected in the past? It's astounding. You had a couple more billion people that were in abstract poverty are now connected to the web. You're going to have some additional human beings working on problems and solving them. The big picture is pretty good. The little picture is a lot of noise. And that noise beats at us relentlessly and drives us to make bad investment decisions. We got to recognize us in that. All of us, because it's human nature. All of us. I'll talk about the Dalbar study and stuff like that after we get back, but I'd rather talk to you at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And if you prefer email, do that. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'd love to hear from you. Come on. Not everybody is out of town. I know. This is like the slowest weekend of the year. I think it is, because everybody's like in the mountains one more time. I was shocked. It was a Friday, so I'm driving into the office on Friday. And normally on the route, and I don't have to go through the big traffic at all, but I can see the edge of the connector, and it's kind of backed up a little out of town. I mean, it's not traffic like anywhere else on the planet. I get it. But for us, it's traffic. Nothing on Friday. It's like, it looks to me like people were simply, they just checked out on Friday. They were gone, done, over, out. Anyway, all right. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is this is all that has happened and more in the last 9 years. It's all of these doomsdayers. Meredith Whitney. Everybody remember that? They come and go every day. Meredith Whitney. Yeah. I think she was a relatively attractive lady. I don't remember. She's gone now. I mean, she's here. She's in the world somewhere, I think. Haven't heard she died. But she predicted that the municipal bond market would collapse. I mean, we're talking collapse. This is bad stuff. Not we're going down a little, that Detroit has some problems, that some cities in California that can't ever do anything except spend more money on for their employees' pension plans because they're beholden to the unions. That we get that. There's some bankruptcies there. This was a collapse. And because she's an attractive female, it's a perfect opportunity to grab her like I believe it was 60 Minutes grabbed her, threw her on national TV so she could proclaim the end of the world. So lots of people sold their municipal bonds. Nothing happened there. Remember the H1N1 global virus that was going to kill us? And of course, there's Obama, and then there's Obama, and there's more Obama that we needed to hate so bad that we didn't ever want to invest money. And yes, he was a terrible business president. I get it. Got it. But what you have to understand is markets are stronger than that. So for those of you that were sure that Trump was going to take it out, I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry you missed the last 50% move in the market. But it's okay because you got 0.25 at the bank. It's okay. It's all right. All of these things, Ebola, I'll never forget Jim Cramer sitting on the desk, you know, because I happened to be working out that morning. There he is. I'm on CNBC, and Cramer's like, oh, literally. His head was in his hands on the desk. Nothing good can happen with the Ebola virus out there. I'm within seconds. That's the bottom of the market. I mean, literally, seconds. The market hadn't even opened. It was futures. That was marking the bottom. Bam, the rally started that day. Not because they cured Ebola. The S&P downgraded the U.S. bonds. Yep, that was good for I think it was like a 5% correction in the market. Certainly something we should freak out about and think we could time and catch. The hurricanes are getting all worse than they were. Oh, yeah, I forgot. The 1920s had the worst hurricane seasons. But anyway, no, that doesn't fly because it's happening right now. The list goes on and on and on and on and on and on of wrong, and yet the chart continues to march higher, now up 400% since the bottom of the market. You just don't have to be smart at this. You have to be controlled. You have to get in, and you have to stay in. That's all. That's all. But we got to dial out the noise because there's lots and lots of really smart-sounding people. And bears do sound smart. They all sound a lot smarter than I do. And I'm sure they are. A lot smarter. To scratch your beard, stare into the camera, or deepen your voice a little bit and just talk about how incredibly worried you are about. Now, here, see, this was what really works, right? I mean, this may not turn on the ladies, okay? But if you want to sound really smart, you just want to talk about, like, currency and stuff. You know, like, I'm really worried about the currency situation there. Or you talk about debt-to-GDP ratios. The debt-to-GDP ratio is just it's off the charts, I'm telling you. You just babble stuff. And when, but if you simply babble optimistic, positive data like GDP in this country has never been higher. Dividends paid by corporations have never been higher. Corporate profits have never been higher. Why is the market at all-time high? Let me think. It's so puzzling to me. It's just so weird. Except, let's see. Balance sheets are the strongest ever. Profits are the highest ever. Dividend payouts are the best ever. And the economy, remarkably, is accelerating again. Unemployment is the lowest ever for every single ethnic group except white guys. It's really close, but it's not quite the all-time low. It's so puzzling why the market would be at all-time highs. I think optimism is so high, I now expect a recession. Makes your head want to blow up. I'm telling you, these people are unbelievable. And we don't even stop to ask these questions. Like, yeah, market's so too high. I don't understand. It just defies all gravity. Yeah, I know. It's just so weird that when things are this good that it might be reflected in the market. It's so weird. I just think, I don't even know what to think. Nuts. We got to take a quick break for Fox News. Want to talk to you, please. Somebody ring up the phones. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That's our number. Let's go to Bob in Boise. Bob, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I know you've talked about this topic before, but I never really paid attention to it because I didn't need to. I have a couple friends a couple years ago got involved with that thing called the indexed
Equity index annuities. Yes.
And I tried to look at the, because I didn't know what it was all about, and I tried to look at the few pages of the summary for the year and then glanced at the one-inch thick book. I have no idea what that's all about. There's words in there. It's amazing. Can you just tell me a little bit about what it's all about, how you can slowly get your money out there? They don't have a lot in it, but still, you know, they went to the luncheon, the free meal, and they – they did this, and I can't believe all this paperwork, and it makes no sense.
No, you shouldn't. It shouldn't take so much paperwork to do anything, right? I mean, you're right on it. You're right on it. If you need an inch of disclosures, we got problems here. I mean, this can't work. Not the way that it sounds so nice and easy, and then you've got 400-page documents that tell you how it really won't work. We can't decipher that. But the answer, Bob, it's straightforward, yet it's not, okay? What I did, and I talked about this about a month ago. We went out and asked the fixed income department at an investment bank to please create pretty close to what you are talking about with an equity index annuity. Please guarantee the downside that you can't have any losses, okay? And let me know what my upside is, okay? And the answer is, it's pretty straightforward. You can basically get the S&P 500 in full with no downside risk on a seven-year basis. Now, that's a moving target. Now, I don't want to get too much in the weeds, okay? It might be 5 years in some periods of time. It might take 10 to have full participation in the market, okay? But basically, what you give up is the dividend, which is what you give up in an equity index annuity. But in an equity index annuity, you also give up something else. 10% plus in marketing costs called commissions. And just because the agent or whatever the annuity pimp is selling that to you, and only getting six or seven doesn't mean that there isn't an agent, a general agent, whatever, that's to also getting some. So I round it off and call it 10, and in many cases it's more. That comes out of the product, and therefore it restricts how much upside you have. Okay? It just can't pay for full upside. So you don't get the full upside. And so, that's why you can't win.
The contract was for $15,000, all right?
Yep.
And you're 3 years into it. What does it mean as, and it's a 9-year surrender. What does it mean? When can they start taking money out? Do they try to take a little bit out every time? When do they get their money? How does that part work?
I would start getting out now because they made a mistake, and you probably have a 10% feature that could take 10% a year out. You're going to have a 9-10 year, or otherwise you get hammered. See, we've been in a raging bull market. Fair enough. I mean, the market is well up, correct? Then I'll bet that after 3 years, they cannot get out of this product, okay, with any gain at all. The surrender charge is that high, and the caps on performance are that low. The caps meaning if the market goes up 15%, they don't get that. They don't get that. It's capped somewhere. We don't know the exact number. Do they get 6% or 7%? Is it capped at 10, but then you have 5 points of cost? I don't know. They're all built weirdly and differently, and that's why you need 100 pages to explain what they are. But my point is if you take the most pure index called a structured note, you can create this, and it is not that expensive to have. So people can create it. It's just that it's really dumb to put it inside of an annuity and pay 10% commissions. It just doesn't make sense because it's locked up for a decade. I don't know because each contract's different, Bob, but what we're talking about in this particular one is you should go to somebody, not the people that sold you this criminal product, but somebody that can help you say, look, should we take 10% out? Is it in a qualified account or non-qualified, meaning an IRA or not? All those are important questions, but most of them have a 10% free out period or every year, and you need to just start getting it out. And then at least you can get some of the money out of this product that won't work. You're not going to lose money in these. That's not what I'm saying. But you will not win. And so if you're really that negative, go buy a treasury bill, okay? Buy U.S. treasuries. At least then, when you decide the world isn't ending, you can actually take your money out because they're liquid and you could sell it and reposition it. You're not stuck in there for a decade with high surrender charges.
So are they basically paying like 2 or 3% a year then?
That's exactly what they do. That's exactly what they do. All these moving parts will bring it back to, okay, on average, what you will do in a raging bull market is you're going to make 3%. But this is not what they tell you at the seminar. You get to participate in the market, and look what happens when the market goes down. You don't lose. Who doesn't want that? We all want that. But that comes at a cost, and I just want them to have to disclose what the cost is, which is you have no upside participation. None. And your money's tied up for a decade. You can't get to it without losing it. That's all I want them to have to say. And if people still say, yeah, you know what? I want that. I want my money tied up. I don't want a chance to win. I want to make sure it's locked away, tied up, and I want to make sure somebody walks away with 10% of my money. That's what I want to have happen. And if they have those disclosures and they write the check and then sign 29 times that they fully understand that this is a really dumb idea, here. But they have to disclose it. That's all I'm asking. Disclose the facts.
So the basic is that the equity index, it's the market, and they give you 3%, and it's not going to go any less than that. They can guarantee you 3% or so, and they're going to get everything from 3% above they take.
No. The guarantee is you won't lose. So if the market goes down, which it never does, but if it did, I'm just saying the theory of this, okay? So if the theory is in the market goes down, you're going to get zero, okay? So your bottom is zero. Your top is capped, and that's why between the 0 years and the cap, on average, if the market goes up over the time frame, you're going to get 3.5%. That's what you're going to get. So that's what I'm saying. In a raging bull market, we've looked at all of these, so many products, and they're sitting right here. I could go through them. I just don't go through them every week. I keep them here, and they show real products of people who've walked in the office exactly the day they put the money in, right? Because it's got a contract date. Exactly, we can go back, obviously, on any device you have and see exactly where the market is and the index that they used. Is it the S&P, the NASDAQ, whatever? And then you put it on there and you say, how did that index do compared to this? And I'm just saying, it's just, it's so awful. It's criminal.
And the fund that they gave up, that they swapped, was a mutual fund that over 10 years was paying 9%.
Yeah, yeah. And that, yeah, I know. It's, it is. All I want them to have to do is disclose the way a certified financial planner. So I'm not saying, because certified financial, we're a dime a dozen out there, right? I mean, there's lots of us.
Right.
It's not like, wow, you know, I'm a rocket scientist, I'm a nuclear engineer. It's nothing like that. We just simply have to have full disclosure in what we do. And we have to have fiduciary responsibility to our clients. We can't lie to people. That's all it is. And so we have to have full disclosure. I'm saying, just say that all people that have financial products have to have a fiduciary relationship. It does. Why is that hard for us to do? If you're an insurance agent in the state of Idaho, you don't have to do that.
Do they get all that money for a loved one, or no? They lose it all.
No. They're going to, everybody in those, they're going to get their money. But the problem is, when you get in this a year or two and then figure out you can't win and I want out, you can't get out. You can't get out. All I wanted to do for all of these annuities is I just want full disclosure. I want the state of Idaho Department of Insurance to get off their fat rears and go do something. Just do something. Just tell people you have to have full disclosure. That's all. They don't even have to tell them they shouldn't sell these products. But it needs to be fully disclosed. Oh, and by the way, I get paid 10% commissions. It needs to be told, not, oh, you know, because here's what they always say. You don't have to worry about that because the insurance company pays me. You don't pay me. Yeah, the magic fairy pays you. It doesn't come out of my money. Of course it does. That's the problem. And all I want is disclosure. That's all I want. Because you know what's going to happen with full disclosure? These products go away.
I hope they enjoyed the meal because it was pretty expensive, that luncheon.
Yeah, I know. Stay away. That's why I tell people, don't go to these things. What's the matter with you? You could buy your own lunch. Don't do this.
Hey, thanks for your time.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Thanks, Bob. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Jim, hang on, please, okay? I got to get one more break out of the way. Bob hit me with one of my favorite topics, obviously, beating up on annuities. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome and thank you for joining us. Hey, if you have any comments and questions during the week, love to hear from you. I mean that very, very sincerely. Go to PetsoFinancial.com. We also have podcasts, articles, calculators to help you with your own financial planning as well. And also, we try to highlight some of the podcasts when we find them to be very, if you will, like long-term helpful. Hopefully every show's that way. But yeah, you know what I mean? There's something special. Like the folks that came in and we did the interview with the what I call the wow folks, where they talk about wowing customers and those experiences. And I just think it's so we highlight some of those as well. So anyway, check it out. But we really want your feedback as well. That's PetsoFinancial.com. And let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for waiting like forever. Thank you.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Yeah, if I didn't know better, I think Bob was your shill.
I know. Didn't he just? It wasn't my shill. He just got me all fired up. It's like he knew. He knew like my girlfriend, just like exactly where to poke. You know, it was like right there. He knew.
Well, yeah. The only thing I can say, I guess, is you go through life, and there are certain simple life lessons you should learn. Fool and his money are soon separated. And P.T. Barnum says, sucker is born every minute.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in today's fast-paced world is every second. But like Kramer. Now, I've seen Kramer. The only Kramer I watch is on Seinfeld.
Right.
I'll tell you.
Well, yeah, he's a good – he'd be a perfect investor.
You know, a real quick thing about George Will. George Will was mentioned on an episode of Kramer when he was talking about Kramer brought up to Elaine how George Will looked. childish kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And Elaine says, well, he is smart. And Kramer says, no, I don't find him that bright. So I thought it was cute. But anyway, I don't know. I've got nothing to say other than it's football season. And I was wondering what happened to you the first hour.
Hey, you know what? I slept in. That's basically what happened. Because we had something in the can. It was time to play. And as you probably know, I'm the only one live today, okay?
I know. Well, the first 30 minutes, that guy, you know, with the $6 billion, you know, I mean, that was interesting. He was interesting.
Good.
And it just occurred to me that it's kind of funny that I would have thought you'd have been live the first hour and then playing golf after that.
Well, that was the thought, except last night kind of went. We were out later than expected. How's that?
Then there's a reason to sleep in.
There was a good reason to sleep in. We needed sleep. That was it. Yes, yes.
Well, anyway, we've got some out-of-town company. So far through the first two-thirds of this year.
The what now? Say that again.
We have lived so far through the first two-thirds of
this
year.
You're right. It is two-thirds.
Eight gone and four to go.
You're right about that. You're right about that.
So, anyway, yeah. I'm sure the market will hang in there, and everybody should just sit tight on their investments and enjoy football.
They should. They should. But they won't. There'll be a constant parade of doom and gloom. There always
is. You know that annuity thing, and you know who I'm talking about. That one guy, he's only the only one I've ever heard actually advertise, you know?
Yeah, these are national deals. They go off to school and they learn how to do it, and they clear all of their annuities through a certain place, and they have all kinds of training and all that of how to do a broadcast about the annuity. It's a very big industry.
But he's the only one that's been on the radio though.
What's that?
He's the only one that's been on the radio that I've heard these, you know, like the one that's going to be in 2 hours. He's the only one that I've heard that actually has a program about it.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, you go to any market, you'll hear them all weekend long.
Oh.
Any market. They're all over. Jim, thank you. I got to roll.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we will talk to you live next week. Have a great Labor Day weekend.